here today. This morning, I would like to hope that it will be an encouragement to you. Before I a couple of things I'd like to say. Number one, I want to thank you for allowing me to be gone. I know it was a sacrifice for me to be gone as long as I was gone, and I appreciate, as I said last week, the man that stood up and took my place and did the things that I normally would do myself, but I'm glad that you were able to do that and willing to do that. Second thing, I wish that you could see what I'm about to show you for yourself. Because if you could, I think it would change how you live as a Christian. I think it would show you the power that is in the Word of God and why God designed it and why there's nothing that's lost in the power of God's Word. What it did in the Philippines, it can do here. It may be more difficult, but it can be accomplished. And so I want to talk about this morning bringing in the sheaves in the Philippines, preaching the gospel in the Philippines. On the map here are the three places that I went to while I was there. I went to Luzon, I went to Mindoro, and I went to Palawan. Those are the three islands that I spent my time on while I was there. In Psalms 126 and verse 6, the psalmist wrote, "He who continually goes forth weeping, bearing seed for sowing, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves with him." That's what we went out to do, to bring in the sheaves, to sow the seed of God in the Philippines and allow him to give the increase. Sheaves are harvest, food, and joy, and thanksgiving. And I'm very thankful and I'm grateful to God, number one, for his mercy and grace that protected me and gave me good health while I was there. Second of all, for the good that I believe that we did by the seed that was planted. This trip began on July 28th. This is aboard the plane in Louisville. It took us 4 hours to get on that plane. There was a problem with the plane, then there was a problem with the weather. But we finally got on it and we got to Minneapolis. And when we got to Minneapolis, we had 5 minutes to get to our connecting flight to Japan. This was the only glitch in the whole trip. We ran through the airport until we came upon a man with one of those carts. And so we asked him if he could get us to the gate so we wouldn't miss our connecting flight. And so we got on there and we were on our way, and then there was a lady who was in a wheelchair that he stopped and put on the cart. But we got to the gate just before they closed the gate and they let us on. So we were the last three people to get on the plane. We got there, but our luggage did not. When we got to Manila, there was a man with a sign. It had all three of our names on it, and we already knew what he was there to tell us, is that our luggage did not make it with us. Our luggage went from Louisville to Minneapolis to Orlando to Detroit to Japan, and Japan to Manila. So you know we didn't get it that day. We got it the next day. And so after we got our luggage on Thursday night, about 10:30, we came back to the hotel and we brought with us 8 boxes. The boxes we brought were filled with material that we handed out to the Filipino preachers and the people we spoke with while we were there. So we had to repack those boxes and we worked till 2 o'clock in the morning in the lobby of the Marriott Hotel in putting those boxes and getting them shipped out on Friday morning. On Friday morning, I met Rody Gumpad, and we began, for the next 28 days, we began to preach on that Friday, July 31st. On July 31st to the 2nd, I was in the city of Manila. Manila is the largest city in the Philippines. In the Philippines, 2/3 of the population live in Manila. And so you can imagine how crowded Manila is. One thing I do not miss is the traffic in Manila. To get from one end of Manila to the other takes about 3.5 hours. And it is I can't even explain it to you. You have to experience it to believe it. But I went to the Bicas Church where Eli Yubunga preaches. And then I went to the Faye 6 Church where Brother Andrew and Ronnie Romero preach. And then I went to the Etza Pastor Church, and that's where Rhody Gumpad preaches with a young man named Samuel Perriott. I would be at Rhody's place for 4 Sundays. This was the first Sunday of the 4 that I would be there. Brother Rhody has 2 congregations. One is in Tagigara, which is in another part of the Philippines, and the other is in Manila. He started this work about 2 years ago. And now it has attendance about 75. He started with him and his family and Brother Payet. And now it has grown to 75 people. And he does a very good work there, but his time is between Tagigara and Manila. And so he's very busy, but he gave a month of his time to be with me, and he went with me, and we began on Monday morning. We left out, and this is me preaching in Manila on Saturday. I preached at 2 different congregations on Saturday, had 1 baptism on Saturday, the first day that I preached. This is at Rhody's place, and the young man you see in the picture is a young man that accompanied me. His name is Grayson Key. He's from Louisville, Kentucky. He attends at the Douglas Hills Church of Christ, where Brother Mark McCary preaches and where Paul Earnhardt is at. And his father is a song leader in Shepherdsville, where Ron preaches, and his son has picked up the talent. He led singing everywhere I went, and he is an excellent song leader. He also had 2 singing classes in Manila while we were there that other preachers and other Christians in Manila came to on Sunday afternoons and did a really good job. This was his first time in the Philippines, and the first trip is all often very stressful, but he did very well. If you notice in the right, I'm preaching there in Manila. If you notice what I'm wearing is their dress. It's called a barong. That's their dress. And I bought that one because it's Kentucky blue, so they know where I was from. So I bought that. It was the first thing I bought when I got there, because I didn't have one that color. I got to tell you a little something about that. It was the first time I was able to go into the store and buy one off the shelf, because all before I was too big and they had to make them for me. So I felt good about that too. Starting on Monday, I went to Palawan. Palawan is an island that is very poor, and it's one of the poor areas in the Philippines. And I would be there from Monday to Friday preaching in different places. I preached in 9 different congregations. We baptized 110 people in Palawan. One day, we baptized 80. The flight to Palawan took about 1 hour. I don't know if you've ever been in a place where the humidity is high. When you get on the plane in Manila to go to Palawan, when you get on it, you think it's on fire, because the smoke is coming out of the ventilators. It's the cold air, because the humidity is so high. Until we get up in altitude, that air will dissipate. But when you get onto it, it seems like there's smoke in the cockpit. First time I went on a flight there, it kind of worried me. But the flight to Palawan takes about 1 hour and 10 minutes. Once we get there, it takes 5 hours in a van to drive to the first place that we're going to preach. What we did is we drove to the farthest end of Palawan, and then we made our way down through the week to when we got to the end of the week, we were headed back towards Manila. This is a plane, and this is us at the airport. Then we got in the van and drove 5 hours to go to the first place to preach. This is some of the scenery in Palawan. It's very mountainous. It's surrounded by mountains. It's one of the few places in the Philippines where you can see the mountains anywhere that you look. Also, the number one crop in the Philippines is rice. And it's a very difficult process to do rice. It was in the growing season. Now it was going to be harvested this month. It will be harvested in this month and in October. On the picture on the right is the path to the building that I preached in. The first building that I went to is down that path. You can barely see it, but you had to go through the forest to get to it, to where the church building was. This is the first place that I preached in Palawan. I want you to notice how open it is. It's just a frame. It's an A-frame building. It's made out of bamboo. It's in the jungle, we would call it, and there's no air conditioning, there's no light, and so you always preach in the daytime. Now, you can't see me, but if you could see my shirt, it's not dry, it is completely wet. And that's one of the reasons I love Brother Rhody. He sweats as much as I do. And every time we got done at one place, he had to change shirts. I didn't bring two shirts. He brought two shirts and he would change into a new shirt. There were about 80 people inside of a building. They were packed like sardines, and they were even outside. If you notice, the people that you see in the foreground, they're on the outside. They're packed around the building so they could hear. This is the first place where we had 28 baptisms. And we take them down to the water. One of the things that we don't do there is I do not, for the most part, baptize. There is one lady that I'll show you in a moment that I did baptize because she asked me to. But usually we don't do the baptizing. We do not want them to think there's anything significant about being baptized by an American. It does not matter who baptizes you. And so we took them down to the water. And that's another thing I don't do. To go down to this place where we baptize, you have to go over a lake. And there is a 2 planks of wood that you had to walk across to get around to get to the lake to baptize. Well, I do not feel confident enough that I'm going to get out there on that plank without falling into the lake and getting baptized again myself. So I didn't go. But Rhody went. Rhody went. And he did okay across the plank until he got to the river. And then he fell in the river. But that's why I didn't go. 10 years, I've learned a few things. So I just stayed and had Rhody take the picture. This is the plank I'm talking about. Underneath that, there is water. What's in the water? I don't know, and I didn't want to know. And so I didn't walk across it. I let other people do it. I'm just showing you that these people, they have no fear of anything. They will go wherever they have to go in order to get done what they need to get done. That's the kind of attitude that they have. 16, obey the gospel in the second place that we go. Now, one of the things that was very heart-wrenching in this place is there were a lot of young girls who were mothers, 14, 15, 16 years old, that lived up in the mountains. Very poor, very uneducated, and it's very heart-wrenching to watch and to talk to them. But they were very receptive, and they had their children with them. And their husbands were notably absent, but they were there. They came down from the mountains in order to hear us preach and teach. This is in the third place that we were at. This is their building on the left, and this is me inside giving my lesson. Again, most places do not have air conditioning. Fans, maybe if you're at a place where there's electricity and you can get a line run, then you can use electricity. But most places in Palawan, no air and no fan. The temperature about 85 to 90, the humidity about the same. Now, in one place we went, the preacher built this baptistry, and it's pretty nice. For the Philippines, this is top-notch. This is 5-star for a baptistry in the Philippines, and we baptized 16 people there. If you notice, they get inside, but you could use this baptistry and stand outside, but they always get inside. And one of the things they do when they baptize here, they put them all in there, and then nothing you do in the Philippines is not done until the picture's taken. They take pictures of everything. And they always got to have one more picture. Then we went to another place. Now this place was a little bit more, this was probably the nicest building I went in Palawan. And it had been established, it had been there for a number of years. And we were able to use the PowerPoint there. And so I used my projector there. And we had over 100 people that were there for my lecture that day. And we baptized, I believe, 15 on that particular afternoon. And these are the preachers that came to the lectures. All these men you see in this picture are Filipino preachers. Everyone you see in this picture are preachers who preach without support. They are not supported. They work in the fields. They work in doing any odd jobs that they can to support themselves. But what they do besides is they preach. And they go anywhere they're asked, and they preach every Sunday, multiple places where they labor, and then they will walk, they'll take a bicycle, take a motorbike, and they'll go other places. I greatly admire them. They are a great encouragement to my faith that they're willing to do that in their country. In this place, you can't see this very well. I do not do a lot of benevolence there, but I did give funds to this young woman. Her child is 3 weeks old, and he had a cyst in the middle of his forehead that was about this big, and they had to have an examination. And so I gave money to that young woman so she could take her baby to the doctor on Tuesday, and get it examined to see if they could remove that cyst. And if it was not life-threatening. And by the way, she did not ask me. She did not ask me for help. I offered it after I met her because I could see that she had a need. Preaching in Palawan. This is the last place that we preached. And this is the last, again, everything's not finished until you take a picture. And so this is a picture of all the brethren gathered together in the last place that we preached in Palawan. On August the 9th, on the 8th and 9th, I was in Manila. And I was preaching at a different congregation in Manila. I baptized three that weekend, three at Rhodey's place on Sunday. Then we went to Mindoro. This is the poorest island in the Philippines. This is where the tribal people live. And they come down out of the mountains to come and listen to the gospel. I preached at 8 different congregations. We baptized 30 people there. And one of the poorest areas in the Philippines. This is preaching in Mindoro. Grayson is leading singing. And I'm doing a lesson there on the right in the first place that we went. You can't see it, but it's an open-air building. If you look at the very top, you can see the outside. It's just an A-frame made out of bamboo. This is the second place that I preached, and it was 100 degrees in here if it was a degree. And they had more people packed in there. I don't know how they got them in there. But they had them in there, and if you notice, they're standing. The people you see at the very far, they're outside. They're in the sun. There's no shade where they're at. They're in the sun. And they stood there until my lesson was over. And so, again, very receptive of our preaching. This is the outside. This is the same place outside. If you notice on the right, Rhodey is translating. This is one of the places that Rhodey had to translate because they didn't understand English very well. This is a place I had a very difficult time at. It was the last place we went to. It was real up in the mountains. And it was a very small building, and there were about 50 people packed in it. It was in the afternoon. It was about 3 o'clock. It was very hot, but there were a lot of little children. And I got up there to speak, and looking at those kids, I thought about my grandchildren And I just breaked, I couldn't talk. For about 5 minutes, I couldn't talk. Because that situation is not going to get better. And the truth of the matter is, some of those kids wouldn't live to be 10 years old. And it just overwhelms me. No matter how many times I see it, it never fails to touch me. And the poverty level. You know, brethren, we just do not understand how blessed we are. We just really don't have a clue about how blessed we are in this country. And this place, there is a preacher there who is not supported. I gave him some money when I was there. And he was so appreciative, but he preaches in three different congregations there every Sunday. And he walks everywhere he goes. He starts at 4 o'clock in the morning and ends about 6 o'clock at night. Every Sunday, that's what he does, to preach to the three different groups that he preaches to. I greatly admire him. He's about 26 years old, and he's a great encouragement. Do you notice, again, the wooden seats, both of the seats are wooden, they're made out of wood, they're framed, they're not very comfortable, but some of them have backs, some of them don't, but again, there's always full of people, but we always have big crowds wherever we go. Now, this is back in Manila. This is a new congregation. I was the first American preacher to be here. This congregation started about in January, and it started with about 4 or 5 people. When I got there, on the Saturday I was there, were 45 people gathered, and I preached on the big picture of the Bible, and there we baptized 5 people and then took them to a man who was pretty well-to-do. And he's the one, if you notice, this is a pretty nice place. That's because a rich man goes here. And he paid to have all that built in order that they'd have a place to meet in. And then when we had to do the baptizing, we went to his house. And he lived in what we would call a gated community. And they had a clubhouse. And we used the pool there to baptize 5 people. I think this is the pool that we used to baptize the 5 people that were obeyed the gospel after the preaching. This was in Manila. There was a lady, young girl, not a lady, she's 15. And I preached on Christian struggles with temptation. And she was crying during the invitation song. I noticed that she was crying. And I went out and talked to her after the sermon was over. And she was greatly moved, she said, by my preaching. And she asked, would I baptize her? Normally, I do not. But she was such a sweet young woman. And she was so kind that I agreed to baptize her. You see the water? We had to wait to get the water in there because we had to go out and get it in order to fill up the baptistry in order to baptize. When Ron Halbrook went to the prison, the last Sunday, this Sunday that I'm here, Ron's at the prison. And 9 people wanted to obey the gospel. There was no water. The last thing we did before we left the Philippines is we gave money to a preacher to take to the jail to get the water to fill the baptistry so they could baptize those 9 men. We just turn on a faucet and the water comes out. We had to pay to get it put in there. The last place that I went to was the Luzon area. I was there the last week, full week I was there, the 17th through the 21st. Brother Grayson went home on the 17th. We dropped him at the airport at 5 o'clock in the morning. And he made his way back to the States, and we went on to go to Luzon, me, Rhodey, and our driver and their wives. I preached in 8 different congregations. I baptized 12 there. And we traveled by the van hours between places. You know, it's not like going from here to Lawrenceburg. When you travel in the Philippines, to go to one place to another takes you at least 2 hours. And we're not talking about nice roads like 127 or 152. We're talking about really rugged, difficult roads. You feel like you're on a horse all the time. You're just going up and down in the van. And that's another thing I won't miss. And we traveled by van everywhere we went. We had to get a driver and we had to pay for fuel. All the costs involved in the Philippines are funneled by us. The Filipinos are too poor. There's no way that they could pay for the travel. They couldn't pay for the fuel. They couldn't pay for the van or the driver. We fund all that ourselves. That's what I raise expenses for, to take care of those expenses. This is the first place that I preached in Lausanne. The men outside are the preachers, and Rody and me, we're taking a picture outside. And again, they're one of the places that had a nicer building. Their building has been there for a long time. It's very well kept, and there was a fan in that place because it was a newer building. This is the second place I preach, and this is outside, and there's people listening inside and outside, and I'm preaching there in the afternoon. We baptized a Pentecostal preacher and his wife. He came to my lecture, and after the lecture, he had a lot of questions. He was premillennial, and I answered his questions. We went and had a study, and afterwards, he came to us and asked if we would baptize him. And then he invited me to come to where he labors at, because the first thing he was going to do is he was going to go and teach his brethren where he preached that he was wrong and he had been wrong, and he was going to correct their teaching. And he said he could get 30 other preachers together if I could come, and he would host it at his place. If I would come and preach to them, he knows that they would listen. Brethren, I couldn't get in a door of a Pentecostal church in this area. They wouldn't even listen to me. There, they're inviting me to come and to preach about what they're doing that is wrong. And they're willing to listen. Why the difference? The difference is their attitude about the truth. Their attitude about God's Word. And that's one of the things why I keep going back. Because that's the kind of hearts we're talking to. People who are receptive. People that will listen. Now, do they all obey? No. Do they all change? No. But many do. Many do. I've been in places where when I started, they had a denominational name on the building. And when we were done, the sign was taken down. And they were going to erect a new one that said the Church of Christ. I've seen that done. I've never seen it done in my country. But I've seen it a number of times in the Philippines. Now, this is the first time I preached to goats. I was preaching, and it was raining. And this was another thing that was different about this trip. It rained more in this trip than any of the other 9 trips that I took. And in this rain, it was a tin roof. And I mean, it was just coming down. I had to yell practically to be heard. And all of a sudden, in the middle of my lesson, I hear this noise. I'm thinking, what is that? And all of a sudden, here come these 2 goats. They come up by my table here. And then they checked me out, I guess. And then they went over on the step, and they laid their head down, and they went to sleep. And they stayed there until the lesson was over. But really, while they were there, they didn't want to be out in the rain. And they were covered with the roof. And so this was the largest building I preached in. It had been there for about 3 years, and it was huge. And the man that preaches there, he was telling me that they got it at a very reduced cost from a denominational group who just wanted to get rid of it. And so I hope he's going to be able to fill it. But that was the largest place that I preached at. Now, this is at the second to last place that I was at, and this was inside, and it was very hot here. It was in the late afternoon. Now, this fella on the right, of course, you know Rody. Rody will be here in July next year for a few days. But the man on the left is a man named Lordy Sangim. He's a very good friend of mine. Brother Rutherford knows him very well. He's helped support him over the years. And Lordy is a very dear friend, and he came to my lecture on Friday to hear me speak, and he also summarized my last lesson in my last place in Lausanne. The person on the right is the preacher and his wife. And you take a good look at that woman. How old do you think she is? Say how old I thought she was. I thought she was about 30. She's 49. I made a real friend there when I told her I thought she was 30. She was real kind to me. Gave me a good place at the table when I went to their place for lunch that day. But he's another one who preaches at three different congregations and supports himself. He has no support, and he preaches at three different places. His name is Rudy Yap. This is the last place I preach in Lausanne. On Saturday, August 22nd, I was in Manila at the congregation where a man named Ben Cruz preached. He passed away a couple years ago. He was probably the oldest pioneer preacher in the Philippines. He preached for 50 years. I got to see his wife. She's a very dear lady. She's still living. And his two sons are now preaching at this place. And one of his children is a female. She's a doctor. Her name is Teresa. She is my doctor whenever I go to the Philippines. We have a problem. Wherever we're at, we get a hold of her. We tell her what our symptoms are, and she recommends whatever medicine we need. And to this date, whatever she has given me has always worked and fixed whatever problem I had. She worships at this congregation. So I told Rhodey, when I'm in Manila, I want to go to this place because I want to see her, because I didn't get to see her on my last trip. And so this place is the hardest to get to in the Philippines because it's on one end of Manila. It takes 3 hours to get there from the hotel that we're in. So we started out at 6 o'clock in the morning to be there at 9 o'clock. And so I preached from 9 to noon, and there were about 120 people there. And this lady that came forward to be baptized was the lady that worked for Teresa that she invited to come to the lecture, and she was baptized that afternoon. This is in the same place, and this is at the last time I preached at Rhodey's, and there were two baptisms on that last Sunday I was there. This is the last place that I preached in Manila, is at the home of a retired police officer. His name is Jimmy Butong, and he was converted at one of the lectures that we did about 5 or 6 years ago. And he began, and I remember the first time I met Jimmy, he had a lot of questions. He wasn't sure, but he was intrigued by what he heard. And so he kept coming back. And he kept listening, and he kept checking, and he kept asking questions. And finally, he was converted. After his conversion, he converted his wife. He converted his neighbors. And now he has a church that's meeting in his home. And that's where we're at. We're in his home. And he converted his garage area into a place of worship. And that's where I preached on the last Sunday I was in Manila. And there were about 35 people that were gathered there. And many of them were his family, but they were there, and I preached at his home. This is the last place that I preached on Monday, August 24th. It was in, and it was pouring rain at this place, too, and they were packed in there. It was all open-ended, and I preached there for about an hour and a half or 2 hours, and two young men came forward to be baptized. I preached on all of God and none of me. I preached about grace. This is where they were baptized. They had a baptistry behind the building. It was just like a tub, and we baptized the two young men. Rhodey, that's Rhodey there, and the young preacher there baptized them. And then, of course, nothing is complete without a picture to show that what happened. And so we took pictures. It was raining the whole time we were out there. Didn't matter. The rain felt good. It was so hot, it felt really good. But that was the last place I preached that day. My preaching was finished. When I left this place, my preaching was finished. I preached in 35 different congregations. I preached over 50 lessons. And I have traveled at least 1,000 miles within the country of the Philippines the 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks I was there. One more thing to do. Tuesday morning, we went to the Bible Society. What is the Bible Society? A Bible Society is a place that sells Bible. That's all they sell. And they sell all dialects, all translations, and they ship them anywhere we want them to go in the Philippines. We have been using them for about 10 or 15 years. The lady that you see here is one of the managers of the society. We have got to know her very well. She handles all of our ordering. What we did is, Brother Ron, we asked the preachers everywhere we went who needed Bibles. And so they gave us a list. Well, when we got the list, it had 3,000 names on it of people who wanted Bibles. We thought, well, we'll never fill that. We'll just do the best we can. So we told them that if you don't get a Bible, don't think that we forgot about you. We'll just carry it forward to the next trip. So we went to the Bible Society, and we ordered 2,865 Bibles at a cost of over $20,000 in American. I bought $7,500 worth. Ron bought the other $12,000 worth. And I also paid $2,000 for all the material that we gave out while we were in the Philippines. I funded that bill, and I paid for that before I left. How are we able to do all that? Because of the generosity of my brethren. When I send out letters for my support, I generally have a figure in mind. My figure was $10,000 this trip because I was not going to be with another preacher. I was with Grayson, but his funds were limited, so all the expense was going to fall on me. So I didn't know. I've never done this before. I always was with Ron, and we split the expense, but here it was all going to fall on me. And so I didn't know what the expense would be, so I thought I would need $10,000. A month before I left, I had $10,000. But then something happened that I didn't count on. The last three churches that came to help me, two of them sent me $1,500, and the other church, my brother, that's where I grew up at. A little bitty church where I grew up at. When I was there, they had about 100 people. Today, they have 15. And so my brother said, you know, you need to write them because they know you, and they're small, but they have money in their bank and in their bank account, and they might help you. So I had to buy a projector for this trip because the one Ron had with him where he was at, I would need one. So I wrote this church and asked them to buy me a projector. If they'd help me buy a projector, I found one for about $1,000. Would they buy that for me so I could use on this trip? They write me back, say, sure, we'll do that, but we've been talking, and we want to help you on your trip. Could you use some more money? Well, at that time when they contacted me, I had not raised my support yet. So I said, sure, you can send me whatever you think you could spare. They sent me a check for $5,000. I spent it at the Bible Society, and I bought Bibles. I could not do what I do there if it were not for the people who helped me. In my 10 years of preaching the gospel in the Philippines, I only send letters out to people who know me, people who know who I am, know about my work, have confidence in me, and 90% of the people that support me on my trips have supported me on every trip that I've taken. I think that there's two reasons for that. When you look on the board, when you leave here today, there's a financial statement. You take a good look at that statement. I raised $22,000 for this trip. Every penny of it's in that report. I don't take anything for these trips. Every dollar that I'm given goes to do that work. My donation to this work is I use my meeting time that I would normally be out doing meetings. I give that work to the Philippines. That's my donation to the work. I'm glad to do it. I promised a man when I came here that I would not do this every year. If I could, I would, because I believe it's necessary, but it's not fair to you. I'm here to do the work here at Harrodsburg. That's what I came to do, and I'm going to do that, and I appreciate your willingness to let me go. But I want you to know I'm not on vacation. I'm not taking it easy. I'm working. And everything I've done and everything I accomplished in this trip, you have a part of that. Because without your help, I couldn't do that. And from the bottom of my heart, I appreciate it. This is the last day I'm done. When I walk out of the Bible Society, my work is done, and I'm only thinking about one thing, getting back to Kentucky. And I will be there, Lord willing, 28 hours later. I touched down in Louisville at 6:30 on Wednesday, August 26th. After 26 hours, I'm back home. We get in early. So what do? We go to Bible study at Shepherdsville, where Ron preaches. And Rita was going to pick me up at the airport after Bible study was over, because she was already at the thing. And lo and behold, there I am. I show up at the Bible study. And then we go to Bible study. And then we go out to dinner because we hadn't eaten yet. So the four of us go out to dinner. And then me and Rita drive back to Harrodsburg. I get in about midnight. And I slept for the first time Friday night after I got back home Wednesday night. Takes me that long to get my body adjusted. So all total, I was gone 30 days. In that time, we baptized 163 souls, obeyed the gospel. I preached in over 30 different congregations, and I spoke over 50 times. It's tiring, it's exhausting, but it is exhilarating. I never leave and come back here that I'm not more pumped up than when I left. I wish, my heart desire is, that you could see what I see. You could see what the gospel can do when it reaches an honest and sincere heart. The gospel has the power to change lives. I've seen it. I know it works. Don't lose faith in the gospel. It still works, even in our country. We just have to plant the seed and let God give the increase. We bought 2,865 Bibles. And so, that's what I did for 30 days. Again, I want you to know that I know I couldn't have not done this trip without your support, your prayers, and your well wishes, and I appreciate it. I want you to know that every time I go, I think about you here, and I pray about you every day, that things are well with you. And my greatest fear was something would happen before I got back. And God, I'm thankful to God that did not happen. A lot of my trips, I go and something happens. And I'm not here, and I feel bad about that. But I can't control what goes on. That's out of my hands. That's in God's hands. And so, that is my trip. And again, my report's on the board, the financial statement's on the board. If you like an individual copy, let me know. I'll be more than glad to support it. All the members here who gave me money for Bibles, they were put to use. Every dime you gave me went to buy the Bibles. That's what I did with it. That's what I purchased on the 25th of August. Please take your song books out and turn to the song that Brother Mel. As I've said, the gospel is God's power to save. No matter where it's preached, no matter what is sown, if we sow the seed, God will give the increase. In the Philippines, there is a receptiveness of the gospel. One of the reasons that the message is so receptive there is because of their poverty. What God offers them through the gospel is what they could never attain to in life. These people understand that their physical lot in life is not going to get better. But you know one of the remarkable things about the Philippines, brethren? They're some of the most happiest people that I've ever met on the earth. And yet they have not, they couldn't, most of them, rub two nickels together. And yet they're some of the happiest people that I know. Why is that? Why is that? What do you think about that? Because I think sometimes we complain about things that we don't know how difficult life can be. We don't know how hard it can be. And we need to be thankful to God every day that we live in a country that affords us the opportunity and the values and the things that we're able to do. And when we have opportunity, when we have opportunity to share the gospel with another person, that's time well spent. That's time that God's word has the power to change lives, but it can't change lives if it's never planted. And that's what we are. We are spiritual farmers. Our job is to plant the seed, and God will give the increase. If you're here and you're subject to the Lord's invitation in any way, we bid you to come forward as together we stand.